and welcome to Ride the Omnibus. I'm your host, Ariel Basca, and today I'm speaking with director Elie Fombi about her film, Our Father, the Devil.
I love Our Father, the Devil. I think it's a stunning film. And I wonder, first of all, if you could talk for a minute, though, about women's stories. And why you chose to craft such a powerful woman's story that encompasses so much in terms of talking about everything from microaggressions to macroaggressions experienced by Black women in different ways. And I love that. I love that.
Ariel, you are like hitting straight to my heart right now. I mean, I don't see it enough in cinema. That's the main reason. And I wanted to tell a nuanced story. And this is not an easy one because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of layers to Marie. But I think even with tragic events that happen, life is full of beautiful things. It's full of laughter. It's full of you know, there's life is always layered. And I feel like sometimes what happens is, especially when I've seen stories about particularly people of color, especially Africans, I feel like that's never there. There's always this focus on like the negative. And I was like, you can tell a story about a difficult topic in a way that I think invites people into it. And I also, you know, particularly because I chose to make this film in Europe, it was just something I couldn't ignore. The microaggressions, especially, which are present everywhere around the world. But I feel them very acutely in Europe. And I thought, you know what, let me include this because especially, you know, my mom's a nurse and having, you know, spent time in nursing homes and having talked to her about her experiences dealing with patients, dealing with managers who are mostly almost always white. It's, you know, because the minute I chose to set my film in this environment, I couldn't separate that. I couldn't leave that out of it because I knew that that was part of the fabric of this world.
Yeah. It's really incredible how you hint at so much with the blocking in this film as well. Like there's so much that you are able to convey with an almost theatrical sense. I do want to make sure that I give you space to kind of talk about how you crafted that, because it's very unique the way that the camera movements and the blocking coordinate in a very powerful way that was very unexpected for me. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the crafting of those power positions on film.
Thank you. Yeah, I am such a minimalist when it comes to camera movement to begin with. I really fell in love with like my early, like I'm into Hitchcock. Hitchcock was my first director that I was obsessed with. Michael Haneke, like some of that kind of cinema that is really, that really uses blocking in a creative way. And that builds tension through what's happening on screen versus just camera movement. And I'm a fan of long takes to start with. And so, both me and my DP, Tinks Chan, when we started talking about the visual language of this movie, that's where the conversation started in that kind of cinema. And also with the very limited budget that we had, we needed to be very smart about how we were utilizing the space and, you know, you also how we were building our days. And so I think that even if I had more money, I still would have shot the film the way that we shot it. But I think that it made us lean into our sensibilities even more because we had those other things to consider. For me, the films that I've watched in the past that have really made me sit on the edge of my seat are films that allow the actors to their bodies to build tension within the frame, where you are just kind of like, what is going to happen? You feel the tension because of the way that the actors occupy the space on screen, but you have no idea, you know, where it's going. And I thought, I want to lean into that. That's what I think works well for this kind of film. And also on the page already, it was such an astronomical hurt. Like, it was such a big ask. I remember finishing the script and going, I have no idea how I'm going to get actors to pull this off. You know, it was just like such a daunting task. I also thought to myself, both me and my DP, we didn't want to get in their way. I come from theater. I start off as an actor. It's part of my training. And I think maybe that seeped in there somewhere, where I felt like if I just let the actors do their thing and get out of their way a little bit, the performances can really sing. And so it was a combination of all of those things, wanting to give the actors the space to really do their thing, but also knowing that this kind of camera language would really like hook an audience in and build tension nicely.
Yeah. And it's powerful. And you do feel that Hitchcockian Haneke sense all throughout mm-hmm. the film. I wonder, though, I love so much about this film and the central performance within the film. And I wonder, in terms of directing, I'm sorry, I don't remember the actress's name, if you could remind me.
Babatita Sajo.
Such a phenomenal performance. And her eyes are so incredibly expressive. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you helped her to craft that performance.
Thank you for mentioning her, because I think she's so, so special. I feel like I hit the jackpot with her, and I discovered, I mean, she's a star. I've been saying it. I think other people have said it. She's incredible. Her and I had a deep conversation. First of all, I saw her in a trailer in 2014. We have a mutual friend in common who's also an actor who was in a film with her. I knew just from her turning to camera and looking into camera without saying anything, I knew she was my Marie. That's how good she acts from the tips of her toes to like the tip top of her head. Like, she's so good. We talked so much about backstory. We really spent time crafting that history, Marie's history, both Babatita and Suleiman, who plays Father Patrick. That's really where the bulk of our work went, was building that like communal history that they have together and understanding like, where are these characters coming from? And I think laying that foundation went such a long way to helping them just be present. I knew that if we had done that work, that they wouldn't have to do much and they could just be present on set. And I will say that Babatita is the most, I've never worked with an actor like her. I just whisper a tiny thing in her ear and I just watch her like completely blossom and morph into something. Like, I can't say enough about her. Suleiman also, you know, but she just, I think, was really the anchor of our set. We all knew from day one, from the first scene we did, we knew we were in for a ride, and we all had to like bring our game up because she elevated all of us. And I feel so blessed that she came on board and that I got to work with her. It's changed even the way that I write, because I feel like I want to work with actors who can fill in those blanks in that way. And she brought a lot. She brought so much to the table. Even the scene with the idea of the dark lipstick, that was her idea. And then that opened up the opportunity for us to have that moment where she goes from black to red. So those are some of the ideas that she brought to the table. But it was a very collaborative experience. And that's kind of what I look for when I'm casting.
I also wonder about if you could comment on your decision to shoot this in Europe and how that played into these notions. You talked about that a little bit with the first question, but I wonder if you could maybe elaborate on why you decided to do that. Was it more for creative or artistic reasons compared to how you wanted to tell this story? Or
yeah, the financial really didn't factor into it early on. I initially wrote, the first draft was set in America, and it just didn't quite work because I'm from Cameroon. It's a Francophone country. Well, it is also English speaking, but I'm from the Francophone side. So I wanted to, there was a part of me that like wanted to write about characters from my own culture in a specific way. And I knew I wanted to say, to write it in French. And so setting it in America, it was very awkward. And people kept asking me why they were speaking French all the time. And I was like, this is going to be a distraction if it's set here. There's a very natural migration from Africa to Europe. And so it felt more plausible for those characters to be in Europe. And as soon as I changed the setting, the story just seemed to fall into place. And so I just followed my instincts with that. It sort of, I let the script really guide me. And when that felt right, I thought, well, I guess this is where it's meant to be set. And I hadn't thought at all about how I was going to get this funded. But that ended up working out as well, because I did end up getting my funding from Europe. So it all made sense.
Yeah. And from the Berlinale, what a great collaboration there. So.
Actually, the Venice Biennale College.
Oh, I'm sorry, Venice. I apologize.
Yes. No, it's okay. I just want to be clear, because I, you know, I want to make sure that they know.
No, that everybody gets proper credit. I apologize.
That's right.
The Venice Biennale, not
Berlinale. Yes.
But I do think it's so powerful, though, how you spend this economy of words that you have in the script, because from and also the way that you use sound. I feel like the whole sonic palette of this film is very spare for the most part. So when you do amp that up with Foley and with other kinds of elements to leave a static camera, that plays so incredibly strongly. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit maybe about how you made those decisions.
Yeah, I'm a huge sound whore.
Me too.
I if you read my script, there's so much sound written into it. It was really in the fabric of how I saw this film coming together. Particularly from the moment I chose not to have any flashbacks, I thought, well, how do I hint at, how do I bring the past into present? And I thought, oh, sound is the key, because it's, to me, much more elegant. And also because when you're with someone, it made me think a lot about, like, just through a lot of the research that I did, especially trauma victims, they're triggered by sounds, you know, it's like I have never gone through any of the things that I wrote about, but like just doing that research and seeing some of these common threads, I knew that that was really the key to bringing that past in the present, and to, I love silences. So I was very intentional with the way that we use sound and with the score also. There's not a lot of score in this movie, but when it comes in, it's really, in my opinion, where it's needed. And we kind of did the same thing for the sound design. And I wanted that to help people just like be even more uncomfortable and more for them to be able to step more into Marie's skin and to feel what she's feeling.
And I think it works very powerfully, but I really wondered, when you constructed this narrative, how much were you expecting people to react to the misogynoir on screen in general?
I honestly never know what people are going to react to. It's like always such a tricky thing of hoping people get it. I mean, and I've had such a vastly different reactions from different audiences, you know. I hoped people would, and like, because it's an important part of the film, but also like everyone has different relationships to that, you know? And so I'm like, I love to make films that are propositions for people to just feel what they feel. A lot of times I'm always asked like, oh, is this your intention? Or is this, and at some point I'm like, my intention doesn't even really matter. It's what you get out of it. And I think one of the things I'm most proud of in this movie in particular is the open-endedness of it. I wanted to ask a lot of questions to the audience. And some questions, in my opinion, are answered. A lot aren't, you know, and I'm like, take what you will from it.
I think that open-endedness lends it to a variety of readings, which also invites further viewing. So I think that was very smart.
Thank you. And even me, like as the person who made this film, I was quite surprised. I remember the first time we watched it, I think the first 10 times I watched this film, or maybe 11, I saw something new. I was quite shocked at like, oh, I'm discovering different aspects of my own film that like I, you know, things that I had to remind myself, oh yeah, that was in the script. But like, it just all came out a little bit differently than what I expected. And I do think it's a film that invites multiple viewings. So thank you for saying that. And I hope people feel that way and watch it several times.
I hope so too, because this is an absolutely phenomenal work. And I wonder also before I ask that, what was your favorite surprise that you came across upon multiple viewings?
I mean, they're mostly little things, but like the scene in the kitchen when Father Patrick arrives, that one, for whatever reason, whenever I wrote that, I don't even think I really quite, I mean, I wrote it and I saw it in a certain way, but the way it actually came together, because we had two takes of that scene, which is crazy.
Wow.
It was so much more. It was so much more tense. It was so much more everything than I expected, that it almost felt like I hadn't written that scene. Like that was a huge surprise to me. The performances, and all of it was so deliberate. It's such a strange thing. I wish I could explain it better, but it, you know, like while we were watching it, we're like, yeah, this works. This is very tense. But then when I watched it, it was a different thing. It was a different animal. Mm. Similarly to the love scene, was also a surprise. I mean, that one I hadn't really, we sort of built that together with the actors. And so that kind of came together on set. But the way that that scene always surprises me, because it's the one scene in the film that always makes me cry. And I'm really proud of it, because I'm like, this scene is not about the sex. Yeah. And my goal for that scene, I don't even think I was aware of it because I wrote it as a sex scene, but I realized it later on when I watched the movie that, oh, that's not about the sex. This is her armor. This is her getting to take her armor down for a little bit and be a woman again. You know, it's like her reconnecting to her body. And it was just like a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful surprise.
And that happens in a very visceral way with the removal of her bra. Like I will be honest, it's so politicized to me to show a Black woman's breasts on screen in so many ways.
Absolutely.
That oftentimes are not even clearly articulated, I think, by the media for a lot of different reasons. But I loved the way it was depicted in this film. And I know that's a very subtle detail, but I feel like there's a respect there for everything that she is and everything that she's gone through that's really, really heartrending in that moment.
Thank you. And part of that is also my DP's work, because he was so tender, and he and the actress Babatita had a very special connection. And there was just this synergy between the three of us, and also with Suleiman, who plays Father Patrick. There was such a trust there that I think, even if, yeah, I mean, it's what we had planned. It's the angle that we had planned. But I still think, because it was him, because of his relationship with the actress, I think it had even more, there was an additional tenderness, an additional respect for her that came through. And I'm really proud of that. And she's very proud of that scene. It was her first love scene on screen, which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that your set was a safe space to try that out.
Yes, absolutely.
Because this is such a stunning collaboration between the two of you. I feel like that had to actually not be the horrendous experience we all know from the past. But
it was not. And I think she has my permission to write more love scenes for her. So I think it was a very beautiful experience. Difficult because it's, you know, a very vulnerable space to be in. It's never easy, you know, with the nudity and you're on set and you're but in front of, it was a closed set, so there wasn't a lot of people around, but still, it's, you know, you're very vulnerable and it's not easy to open up yourself like that. So I appreciated her trusting me enough to do that. But we do have this incredible bond now because of this film, and I'm excited to work with her again. I'm writing more stuff for her.
That's wonderful. And I look forward to seeing all of that stuff in the future. So keep me in the loop.
Definitely will.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been a delight.
For me as well.
I really genuinely mean it. I want to hear everything you do from here on out.
Thank you. And also, like, our film's going to be released next Friday at the Quad Cinema in New York City. It's opening up theatrically there and going to LA on September 1st at Lemley Royal. So please just plug it out there and let people know to, you know, tickets will be available. The tickets are available currently. And I will be there to do a Q&A with Shaka King, the director of Judas and the Black Messiah, who is going to be giving us a little boost. And I hope people come out and support. So just put that into your network.
I absolutely will. This is a phenomenal film, and I wish you the greatest success and luck with this film.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Ariel.
So nice to meet you as well. And I wish you so much luck. And
thank you.
Please, please, please let your actress know how phenomenal she really is.
I certainly will. I will let her know. I tell her this every day, but I will continue to tell her, and I'll let her know that you said that.
All right. Well, you take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. And thank you for taking a moment right now to reflect with me on the history of the land you are listening on now. Whether you are stuck in traffic or sitting in your office chair, take the time to look up whose traditional lands you are on now and what treaties govern those territories. I record this podcast on the site of land stolen from the Manahoac people. I am grateful to work on this land, and I acknowledge that we need to protect and honor the history of the indigenous people from other tribal nations that have made innumerable contributions around the world. I share this in the hope that my listeners may join me in honoring our past, present, and future. Without this land, this earth, and each other, we are nothing. Before I go, please take 30 seconds now to leave us a 5-star review by clicking on Support the Show in the show notes. We don't want your money, we want your words. A simple RTO rocks my socks expands our reach and helps us keep bringing you great content. And connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, where we are at Omnibus Ride. You can also visit our website, omnibusride.com, where you can go to dive deeper into our content and learn more about the show. A special thank you to our amazing editor, William Das. We truly couldn't do what we do without him or Danielle. Be well, be safe, and keep in touch.